The Fellowship of the Ring, Cassette 6.
Their going was very slow. To prevent their getting separated and wandering in different directions, they went in file, with Frodo leading. Sam was behind him, and after him came Pippin, and then Merry. The valley seemed to stretch on endlessly. Suddenly Frodo saw a hopeful sign. On either side ahead, a darkness began to loom through the mist, and he guessed that they were at last approaching the gap in the hills, the north gate of the Barrow Downs. If they could pass that, they would be free. "Come on! Follow me!" he called back over his shoulder, and he hurried forward. But his hope soon changed to bewilderment and alarm. The dark patches grew darker, but they shrank, and suddenly he saw, towering ominous before him and leaning slightly towards one another like the pillars of a headless door, two huge standing stones. He could not remember having seen any sign of these in the valley when he looked out from the hill in the morning. He had passed between them almost before he was aware, and even as he did so, darkness seemed to fall round him. His pony reared and snorted, and he fell off. When he looked back, he found that he was alone. The others had not followed him. "Sam!" he called. "Pippin! Merry! Come along! Why don't you keep up?" There was no answer. Fear took him, and he ran back past the stone, shouting wildly, "Sam! Sam! Merry! Pippin!" The pony bolted into the mist and vanished. From some way off, or so it seemed, he thought he heard a cry, "Hoy! Frodo! Hoy!" It was away eastward, on his left as he stood under the great stones, staring and straining into the gloom. He plunged off into the direction of the call, and found himself going steeply uphill. As he struggled on, he called again, and kept on calling more and more frantically. But he heard no answer for some time, and then it seemed faint and far ahead and high above him. "Frodo! Hoy!" came the thin voices out of the mist. And then a cry that sounded like, "Help! Help!" often repeated, ending with a last, "Help!" that trailed off into a long wail, suddenly cut short. He stumbled forward with all the speed he could towards the cries, but the light was now gone, and clinging night had closed about him, so that it was impossible to be sure of any direction. He seemed all the time to be climbing up and up. Only the change in the level of the ground at his feet told him when he at last came to the top of a ridge or hill. He was weary, sweating, and yet chilled. It was wholly dark. "Where are you?" he cried out miserably. There was no reply. He stood listening. He was suddenly aware that it was getting very cold, and that up here a wind was beginning to blow, an icy wind. A change was coming in the weather. The mist was flowing past him now in shreds and tatters. His breath was smoking, and the darkness was less near and thick. He looked up and saw with surprise that faint stars were appearing overhead amid the strands of hurrying cloud and fog. The wind began to hiss over the grass. He imagined suddenly that he caught a muffled cry, and he made towards it. And even as he went forward, the mist was rolled up and thrust aside, and the starry sky was unveiled. A glance showed him that he was now facing southwards, and was on a round hilltop, which he must have climbed from the north. Out of the east the biting wind was blowing. To his right there loomed against the westward stars a dark black shape. A great barrow stood there. "Where are you?" he cried again, both angry and afraid.
"Here," said a voice deep and cold, that seemed to come out of the ground. "I am waiting for you."
"No," said Frodo, but he didn't run away. His knees gave, and he fell on the ground. Nothing happened, and there was no sound. Trembling, he looked up, in time to see a tall, dark figure like a shadow against the stars. It leaned over him. He thought there were two eyes, very cold, though lit with a pale light that seemed to come from some remote distance. Then a grip stronger and colder than iron seized him.
The icy touch froze his bones, and he remembered no more. When he came to himself again, for a moment he could recall nothing except a sense of dread. Then suddenly he knew that he was imprisoned, caught hopelessly. He was in a barrow. A barrow white had taken him, and he was probably already under the dreadful spells of the barrow whites, about which whispered tales spoke. He dared not move, but lay as he found himself, flat on his back upon a cold stone, with his hands on his breast. But though his fear was so great that it seemed to be part of the very darkness that was round him, he found himself as he lay, thinking about Bilbo Baggins and his stories, of their jogging along together in the lanes of the Shire, and talking about roads and adventures. There is a seed of courage hidden, often deeply it is true, in the heart of the fattest and most timid hobbit, waiting for some final and desperate danger to make it grow. Frodo was neither very fat nor very timid. Indeed, though he did not know it, Bilbo and Gandalf had thought him the best hobbit in the Shire. He thought he'd come to the end of his adventure, and a terrible end, but the thought hardened him. He found himself stiffening, as if for a final spring. He no longer felt limp like a helpless prey. As he lay there, thinking and getting a hold of himself, he noticed all at once that the darkness was slowly giving way. A pale greenish light was growing round him. It did not at first show him what kind of a place he was in, for the light seemed to be coming out of himself and from the floor beside him, and had not yet reached the roof or wall. He turned, and there in the cold glow he saw lying beside him Sam, Pippin, and Merry. They were on their backs, and their faces looked deathly pale, and they were clad in white. About them lay many treasures, of gold maybe, though in that light they looked cold and unlovely. On their heads were circlets, gold chains were about their waists, and on their fingers were many rings. Swords lay by their sides, and shields were at their feet. But across their three necks lay one long naked sword. Suddenly a song began, a cold murmur rising and falling. The voice seemed far away and immeasurably dreary, sometimes high in the air and thin, sometimes like a low moan from the ground. Out of the formless stream of sad but horrible sounds, strings of words would now and again shape themselves. Grim, hard, cold words, heartless and miserable. The night was railing against the morning of which it was bereaved, and the cold was cursing the warmth for which it hungered. Frodo was chilled to the marrow. After a while the song became clearer, and with dread in his heart, he perceived that it had changed into an incantation. "Cold be hand and heart and bone, and cold be sleep under stone, never more to wake on stony bed, never till the sun fails and the moon is dead. In the black wind the stars shall die, and still on gold here let them lie, till the dark lord lifts his hand over dead sea and withered land." He heard behind his head a creaking and scraping sound. Raising himself on one arm, he looked, and saw now in the pale light that they were in a kind of passage, which behind them turned a corner. Round the corner a long arm was groping, walking on its fingers towards Sam, who was lying nearest, and towards the hilt of the sword that lay upon him. At first Frodo felt as if he had indeed been turned into stone by the incantation. Then a wild thought of escape came to him. He wondered, if he put on the ring, whether the barrow wight would miss him, and he might find some way out. He thought of himself running free over the grass, grieving for Merry and Sam and Pippin, but free and alive himself. Gandalf would admit that there had been nothing else he could do. But the courage that had been awakened in him was now too strong. He could not leave his friend so easily. He wavered, groping in his pocket, and then fought with himself again,
and as he did so the arm crept nearer. Suddenly resolve hardened in him, and he seized a short sword that lay beside him, and kneeling he stooped low over the bodies of his companions. With what strength he had, he hewed at the crawling arm near the wrist, and the hand broke off. But at the same moment the sword splintered up to the hilt. There was a shriek, and the light vanished. In the dark there was a snarling noise. Frodo fell forward over Merry, and Merry's face felt cold. All at once, back into his mind, from which it had disappeared with the first coming of the fog, came the memory of the house down under the hill, and of Tom singing. He remembered the rhyme that Tom had taught them. In a small, desperate voice he began, "Ho, Tom Bombadil!" And with that name his voice seemed to grow strong. It had a full and lively sound, and the dark chamber echoed as if to drum and trumpet. "Ho, Tom Bombadil, Tom Bombadillo, by water, wood, and hill, by the reed and willow, by fire, sun, and moon, hearken now and hear us. Come, Tom Bombadil, for our need is near us." There was a sudden deep silence, in which Frodo could hear his heart beating. After a long, slow moment he heard plain, but far away, as if it was coming down through the ground or through thick walls, an answering voice singing,
"Oh, Tom Bombadil is a merry fellow, bright blue his jacket is, and his boots are yellow. None has ever caught him yet, for Tom he is the master. His songs are strong as songs, and his feet are faster."
There was a loud rumbling sound, as of stones rolling and falling, and suddenly light streamed in, real light, the plain light of day. A low door-like opening appeared at the end of the chamber beyond Frodo's feet, and there was Tom's head, hat, feather, and all, framed against the light of the sun rising red behind him. The light fell upon the floor, and upon the faces of the three hobbits lying beside Frodo. They didn't stir, but the sickly hue had left them. They looked now as if they were only very deeply asleep. Tom stooped, removed his hat, and came into the dark chamber, singing,
"Get out, you old wight, vanish in the sunlight, shrivel like the cold mist, like the winds go wailing, out into the barren lands, far beyond the mountains, come never here again, leave your barrow empty, lost and forgotten be, darker than the darkness, where gates stand forever shut, till the world is mended."
At these words there was a cry, and part of the inner end of the chamber fell in with a crash. Then there was a long trailing shriek, fading away into an unguessable distance, and after that, silence.
"Come, friend Frodo," said Tom, "let us get out onto clean grass. You must help me bear them."
Together they carried out Merry, Pippin, and Sam. As Frodo left the barrow for the last time, he thought he saw a severed hand wriggling still, like a wounded spider, in a heap of fallen earth. Tom went back in again, and there was a sound of much thumping and stamping. When he came out, he was bearing in his arms a great load of treasure, things of gold, silver, copper, and bronze, many beads and chains and jeweled ornaments. He climbed the green barrow, and laid them all on top in the sunshine. There he stood, with his hat in his hand and the wind in his hair, and looked down upon the three hobbits that had been laid on their backs upon the grass at the west side of the mound. Raising his right hand, he said in a clear and commanding voice,
"Wake now, my merry lads, wake and hear me calling. Warm now be heart and limb, the cold stone is fallen, dark door is standing wide, dead hand is broken, night under night is flown, and the gate is open."
To Frodo's great joy the hobbits stirred, stretched their arms, rubbed their eyes, and then suddenly sprang up. They looked about in amazement, first at Frodo, and then at Tom standing large as life on the barrow top above them, and then at themselves in their thin white rags, crowned and belted with pale gold and jingling with trinkets.
"What in the name of wonder?" began Merry, feeling the golden circlet that had slipped over one eye.
Then he stopped, and a shadow came over his face, and he closed his eyes.
"Of course, I remember," he said. "The men of Carn Dûm came on us at night, and we were worsted. Ah, the spear in my heart!" He clutched at his breast. "No, no," he said, opening his eyes. "What am I saying? I've been dreaming. Where did you get to, Frodo?"
"I thought that I was lost," said Frodo, "but I don't want to speak of it. Let us think of what we're to do now. Let us go on."
"Dressed up like this, sir?" said Sam. "Where are my clothes?"
He flung his circlet, belt, and rings on the grass, and looked round helplessly, as if he expected to find his cloak, jacket, and breeches, and other hobbit garments lying somewhere to hand.
"You won't find your clothes again," said Tom,
bounding down from the mound, and laughing as he danced round them in the sunlight. One would have thought that nothing dangerous or dreadful had happened, and indeed the horror faded out of their hearts as they looked at him and saw the merry glint in his eyes.
"What do you mean?"
asked Pippin, looking at him, half puzzled and half amused.
"Why not?"
But Tom shook his head, saying,
"You've found yourselves again out of the deep water. Clothes are but little loss if you escape from drowning. Be glad, my merry friends, and let the warm sunlight heat now heart and limb. Cast off these cold rags, run naked on the grass, while Tom goes a-hunting."
He sprang away downhill, whistling and calling. Looking down after him, Frodo saw him running away southwards along the green hollow between their hill and the next, still whistling and crying,
"Hey, now, come hoy, now, whither do you wander? Up, down, near or far, here, there or yonder? Sharp ears, wise nose, swish tail and bumpkin, white socks, my little lad, and old fatty lumpkin."
So he sang, running fast, tossing up his hat and catching it, until he was hidden by a fold of the ground. But for some time his "Hey now, hoy now!" came floating back down the wind, which had shifted round towards the south. The air was growing very warm again. The hobbits ran about for a while on the grass, as he told them. Then they lay basking in the sun, with the delight of those that have been wafted suddenly from bitter winter to a friendly clime, or of people that, after being long ill and bedridden, wake one day to find that they are unexpectedly well, and the day is again full of promise. By the time that Tom returned, they were feeling strong and hungry. He reappeared, hat first, over the brow of the hill, and behind him came, in an obedient line, 6 ponies, their own 5 and 1 more. The last was plainly old Fatty Lumpkin. He was larger, stronger, fatter, and older than their own ponies. Merry, to whom the others belonged, had not, in fact, given them any such names, but they answered to the new names that Tom had given them for the rest of their lives. Tom called them one by one, and they climbed over the brow and stood in a line. Then Tom bowed to the hobbits.
"Here are your ponies now," he said. "They've more sense, in some ways, than you wandering hobbits have, more sense in their noses, for they sniff danger ahead, which you walk right into. And if they run to save themselves, then they run the right way. You must forgive them all, for though their hearts are faithful, to face fear of barrow wights is not what they were made for. See, here they come again, bringing all their burdens."
Merry, Sam, and Pippin now clothed themselves in spare garments from their packs, and they soon felt too hot, for they were obliged to put on some of the thicker and warmer things that they had brought against the oncoming of winter.
"Where does that other old animal, that fatty lumpkin, come from?" asked Frodo.
"He's mine," said Tom. "My four-legged friend, though I seldom ride him, and he wanders often far, free upon the hillsides. When your ponies stayed with me, they got to know my lumpkin, and they smelt him in the night, and quickly ran to meet him. I thought he'd look for them, and with his words of wisdom take all their fear away. But now, my jolly lumpkin, old Tom's going to ride. Hey, he's coming with you, just to set you on the road, so he needs a pony. For you cannot easily talk to hobbits that are riding, when you're on your own legs, trying to trot beside them." The hobbits were delighted to hear this, and thanked Tom many times. But he laughed, and said that they were so good at losing themselves that he would not feel happy till he had seen them safe over the borders of his land. "I've got things to do," he said, "my making and my singing, my talking and my walking, and my watching of the country. Tom can't be always near to open doors and willow cracks. Tom has his house to mind, and Goldberry is waiting." It was still fairly early by the sun, something between 9 and 10, and the hobbits turned their minds to food. Their last meal had been lunch beside the standing stone the day before.